won't ask you if you want any rebuttal time, because I see if you don't want to rebut yourself.
If I can't fight my weight up a wet paper bag, I probably can't. No, I do not need any rebuttal, Your Honor. Thank you.
Your Honor. Your 15 minutes and may proceed with
the Thank you, Judge Beals. May it please the Court, Robert Harris for Appellant Stan Hubbard. This is a case that was before the Court on appeal approximately 9 years ago. At that time, the issue was whether income should be imputed to the appellee, Ms. Seren Hubbard, and the Court found and affirmed the trial court in finding that income should not be imputed at that time because the children's ages necessitated her return, her staying home and not returning to the workforce. The trial court had found in 2008, however, that with little effort she could earn what she had previously been earning before she started staying home, $30,000 per year. We shift to 2016, in which Mr. Hubbard alleged that the passage of time, and specifically the children's ages, that approximately 9 years had passed.
Well, one child had been emancipated.
Yes, sir.
The other child was still residing in the home.
Yes, sir. Three children were still residing in the home. At the time of the trial, Hayden, the oldest, was a freshman at William & Mary. The other children were 18, 15,
well, let me kind of cut to the chase.
Yes, sir.
Ask this question, because it seems to me the trial court obviously ultimately concluded, I'm not trying to put words in the trial court's mouth, but it seems to me to boil down to simply, given that there's a change in circumstances and one child is now emancipated, it's not a material enough change to warrant changing the imputation calculation.
Is that correct? Actually, the court made an inconsistent factual finding. On the one hand, page 32 of the joint appendix, if your court were to look at the joint appendix, actually they're beside each other. On the one hand, the court did find, page 32 of the joint appendix, that that factor had changed, that is, the continued absence from the workforce no longer applied because one child had emancipated and the other children were older. And therefore,
it's undeniable that there's three remaining children that are not emancipated still require the care of their mother.
That's correct. It's uncontradicted that, in fact, three children are not emancipated, whether they need the requirement for care of their mother is a factual issue. In fact, Ms. Hubbard testified that she is willing to work 5 days a week. And in fact, during the previous 2 years, 2014 and 2015, Your Honor, she had in fact worked as a longtime substitute teacher, sometimes 5 days a week for several months at a time.
Well, the trial court ultimately concluded, quote, no evidence establishes passage of years lessen the necessity for Ms. Hubbard to continue her absence from the workforce or lessen the financial support she needs to meet her obligations. That's obviously a factual determination.
That's at page 33. At page 32.
Page 45, actually.
Okay.
But isn't that a factual finding that's binding on us, though?
No, Your Honor. In fact, the court also found, as a matter of fact, that the passage of time, that is the children's ages, no longer necessitated her being a stay-at-home minor. In fact, the court's decision was predicated not upon the children's ages or level of maturity or how much time she needed to stay at home, because she conceded she works full time 5 days a week when she wants to. If asked, she will, and sometimes she does. The court predicated its decision based upon Mr. Hubbard's failure in his case in chief to present two pieces of evidence, one being his ongoing ability to pay the current award of $2,500 per month. And we conceded that the issue of his ability to pay was not before the court because we had not alleged that was a material change. That is to say that the standard is, under every published case, Brown v. Brown is easier to say, so I'll stick with Reese and Brown. The cases are replete for the proposition that the moving party has the burden of proving a material change of circumstances and that this change warrants a modification of support. What the trial court did, in fact, however, is it said that not only must you prove that material change, but you need to prove other facts that you haven't alleged have changed. Again, the first premise was, is Mr. Hubbard's ability to pay an issue? And we stipulated it is not an issue. We never have asserted that he has the inability to pay. In fact, even if we hadn't said that at trial, the only inference to be drawn from the silence is that he has the ability to pay. That's the only, in fact, the case, they're not cases on point with respect to domestic relations cases, but their case, Neely v. Johnson.
Basically, what you're saying is that it was incorrect to conclude by the trial court that the only inquiry that needed to be made in the context of this case was whether or not your client still had the ability to pay.
That's partially correct. That was not the only issue. The issue was not, Judge Austin, whether, in fact, he had the ability to pay. That was not before the court in terms of our assertion on the motion to amend. We never put before the court the ability to pay as an issue. In fact, there are case law that provides, for example, that if Mr. Hubbard had alleged that he has a lesser ability to pay,
or that an affirmative duty to prove that.
Exactly. Or that Ms. Hubbard has a lesser need, as her expenses have gone down, that I would have a burden of proving those material changes.
So for instance, if your client was making I'm just going to use round figures because it's easy for me to math. Your client was making $100,000 10 years ago, and the wife was making $20,000, and then later the husband was making, fast forward 6 to 7 years later, husband's still making $100,000, so he still has the ability to pay that amount, but now wife is making $50,000, and in addition to that, two or three of the kids that they had out of the five have been emancipated. You wouldn't necessarily have to get into what the husband is currently making. You could only focus on the circumstances vis-a-vis the wife.
That is correct, Your Honor. And that fact pattern is close to our situation as it relates to the wife's and the issue in imputation. I'll get there in a minute. But we had not posited, we had not made the proposition that Mr. Hubbard's ability to pay had anyway been compromised in the last 9 years.
The trial court missed your theory of the case.
That's correct.
Why can't the trial court's letter of opinion here be read to simply observe that, and as it said, that neither party presented any evidence about their ability to pay? And then in Hollowell versus Hollowell, we held that material change in circumstances must bear upon either the financial needs of the dependent spouse or the ability of the supporting spouse to pay, or being a significant word in there.
That's correct.
And the trial court simply analyzing this case, well, neither party has presented any evidence about the ability to pay. Now let's turn to the financial needs, and I see no significant change there, so I'm making no change whatsoever. Isn't that a valid interpretation?
Yes, sir. You correctly read the Hollowell. You quoted the Hollowell decisions written in the disjunctive. The ability to pay was not before the court as an issue that we proved. And moreover, we did not say that she had a lesser financial need. Let's be very clear about that. We did not assert that she had a lesser financial need. In this case, the trial court had found that her financial need was $2,500 per month. The operative issue is a financial need from whom? And our position was that given the lapse of time of the 9 years, the Court of Appeals remarked in 2008 in its unpublished opinion that she would return to the workforce after her youngest child, who's now 12, at the time the child was 2. That she would return to the workforce after 2 years of training once that youngest child entered school. And we advanced from now 2008 to 2016. The child is now no longer 2 years old, but 12 years old, and is now in middle school. So the court then said, well, you have not proved the payee's need. That the court put the appellant, that is the payor, to the task of proving the payee's need. I can't find any jurisprudence.
Well, certainly your burden to prove the material change in circumstances if you want to seek an alteration in the support.
Yes, sir. I don't disagree with Judge Humphreys. In the material change in circumstances alleged that the children's aging and the wife's return to work, as she wanted to, the last 6 years since the youngest child, in fact, started school. The evidence was clear that she, in fact, returned to work when the youngest child started kindergarten, that those allegations were, in fact, proved. The question then is, did the payor have the burden of proving the payee's need? And I submit that in neither a published decision nor any unpublished decision have I discovered any case in which the trial court, the Supreme Court has declared that the payor has the burden of proving the payee's need unless the payor, in moving for support, has alleged a change in that need. And very clear, we did not allege that she had a lesser need. We alleged that, in fact, her self-sufficiency that she had in 2016 warranted that Mr. Hubbard would no longer pay the support because she now had this, had the self-sufficiency.
She doesn't have a lesser need. The question is how she sustains that need.
That's correct. The upshot of this case is that, in fact, if the court were to rule that in all motions to amend, regardless of what's alleged, that the pay, in this illustration, that the payor, this is important precedentially, that the payor has the burden of proving the payee's need, then every case going forward with the trial court, the payor is charged with that responsibility of proving the payee's need. In other words, presenting the whole case for...
If we adopt your theory, then all that has to happen is you file a petition for material for a change in support based on material change in circumstances, and the burden now shifts to the supporting party to prove that they still need what they need.
Where
do you find any authority of the law for that when it seems to me the law is just the opposite? You're the one seeking the change. You have the entire burden to establish everything having to do with the necessity for that change.
Well, I submit that the law does not provide, Hollowell does not, for example, provide that once I have proved my material change in circumstance, that then I open up the Pandora's box and have to prove every other factor under 20-107.1, including the payee's need. Your Honor, if Ms. Hubbard had a different need, that is to say, Your Honor, I understand the imputation issue, but I have a greater need than I had in 2008.
Well, here the trial court found that no material change in circumstances was proved in the first place, so we would never, under your theory, I guess then we would never get that far.
The court found that, on the one hand, it said that there had been a material change in the circumstances. On the other hand, the court also declared that the lapse of time and the oldest child's going back to college was a material change in circumstance in that same letter opinion. So what the court then therefore did is it said, okay, despite the evidence of, clearly through an expert, Mr. Melberg, of her working, of her ability to get to train for the last at least two years of the six-year window of time, she had 6 years, she didn't start doing it until 2014 in terms of looking at it, that despite that evidence, and by the way, this is not just relegated issue to teaching. We focus on teaching. If you want to teach, Mr. Melberg also presented evidence that she had the ability to earn $26,000 to $42,000 a year in non-teaching positions, and the court disregarded that evidence, all because of two issues that the court said you didn't prove that he has the ability to pay support. In other words, setting up a straw man to knock it down, but because I didn't set it up and knock it down, therefore the court denied the motion to amend, that I didn't prove Mr. Hubbard's ability to pay support when it never was an issue.
That's where you argue that Judge Johnson was just plainly wrong.
Judge Johnson was plainly wrong in setting up that issue that I had the ability to show an ongoing ability to pay support when I never alleged that he had any inability to pay that support. That wasn't part of the motion to amend in the first place.
So in other words, the theory of your complaint essentially concedes, and please forgive me for using that word, but it helps me get to where I'm trying
to
get.
Sure.
That the baseline for support is $2,500.
For purposes of argument, yes, sir. Yes,
the baseline is $2,500. The inquiry that needs to be made in the context of this material change of circumstances case is how we arrive at that $2,500 with regard to who pays this $2,500.
There's no question that the need has not been challenged. $2,500. It's clear. I said that a few minutes ago. That's clear. We're not disputing that. We never have alleged that she has a lesser need. The issue is, from whom does she need to satisfy that need? Is it from continuing to be from Mr. Hubbard, or does she now have the self-sufficiency, or should have the self-sufficiency, to satisfy that need herself? Under Baytop, for example, one cannot remain idle. And there's another case I cannot pronounce. You all see it every day, Srinivasan versus Srinivasan, in which stands for the proposition that one cannot remain idle. Now, in that court, the court did not require that the spouse immediately go back to work. But it stands for the proposition that the payee does have an obligation to be as self-sufficient as possible. And I submit that between 2008 and 2016, when the very linchpin of the award of support was that her staying at home to raise the children was the operative issue, and that was going to change when the youngest child entered kindergarten, that fact happened 6 years ago, that material change now has been triggered. And as Humphreys pointed out, one child's in college and the youngest is 12 years old. And moreover, we cannot forget that she has been working. She had, in fact, testified, "I would work 5 days a week if offered."
Theoretically, even in the context of your case, by coming in with your theory of the case, and I think I understand it, there is a possibility that the trial court, when considering the material change of circumstances, could have concluded that she needs more money now.
If she put on evidence of a higher need, yes, sir. Yes, sir. The bottom line is that it's not my burden as the payor to prove the other side's case in lay terms. Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time has elapsed. Yes,
thank sir. You, Mr. Harris. We will recounsel. Then the court is going to take a brief recess. We will...